Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bechoros Daf Mem Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur picks up with a discussion that we started at the end of our previous shiur. So just to recap a little bit, at the lower part of Daf Mem Aleph Omid Beis, we saw Rav Chisda mention that the Tanaic controversy that concerned the issue of androgynous and tumtum, he says, is limited to the issue of an androgynous, to the case of an animal that has a double gender sign to it, both male and female. But a tumtum, Rav Chisda claimed, everyone would agree, is a sveka, is a doubt. In other words, it is either a male or a female. A tumtum is that which has its organs of gender covered over. And as a result of this classification, says Rav Chisda, it will have the holiness of a bechor misofik. In other words, on the possibility that it is a male, it will have this sanctity attached to it. But again, it's sanctity out of doubt. This is in contrast with the androgynous, which we saw some opinions saying that the androgynous is a separate entity, and hence it has no kedushas b'chor whatsoever. So our discussion today is focused on tumtum. At the very top of Mem Beis, we noticed a triangle, and this represents, as our Mivneh heading, the structural note in the outside margin indicates, Kushyos al Rav Chisda. So if you scan down this Omid, you will see a number of these triangles appearing, all of them indicating that the Gemara will introduce, in this case, you will see Tanaic sources, all the frames that you see on this page, all seemingly indicating that Tumtum is not something that's a function of a doubt. On the top line, we had seen a quote from the Parsha dealing with Erechin, the dedication of one's Torah value. That's with regard to human beings. And the Torah says that the word the Gemara says that the word Hazohar that appears in Parsha's Erechin excluded a Tumtum as well as an androgynous. Now, if that's the case, if the Torah is doing an exclusion of it, the Torah doesn't deal with doubts. As we've said in the past, Ein Sofek Klapei Shmaya, in Shamayim, the Almighty who gave the Torah doesn't have doubts concerning how to classify things. So if a Torah word comes to exclude something, it's coming to exclude something that is probably another classification, a separate classification, which we call a Beria B'fnei Atzma, a separate entity, not male, not female. So in response to that source, the Gemara had said on the second line from the top, which was the last thing that we learned in our previous shiur, Sami Mikan Tumtum. Delete from this particular source the reference to Tumtum, and thereby leaving Rav Chisda intact. The Torah word Hazohar excludes androgynous from the Parsha of Erechin, but it doesn't exclude a Tumtum, because a tumtum falls under the category of either a male or a female, and as such, there is a Torah value for males and for females. So either way, a tumtum who had dedicated his Torah value will have to pay to the Beis HaMikdash this dedication. We continue now in the Gemara, second line from the top, with another question. It might be pointed out, if you scan ahead in the Gemara, each time the Gemara presents the question with a Tanaic source, there will be the same response, namely Sami Mikan Tumtum, until we get to the last triangled section where the Gemara presents a question, and in fact does come up with this response of take out tumtum from the source and replace it with something else. Of course, we'll see more about that when we get to it. But as far as the overview of this Gemara is concerned, you see all of the triangle sources, and they seemingly present a problem for Rav Chisda with regard to his opinion on tumtum. At the end of this series of questions, tumtum is simply deleted from each one of the sources. After that, the Gemara, on the last quarter of the page, and we have a topic heading that introduces that section, there will be an attempt to set up Rav Chisda as a machlokes tanoim. In other words, and that represents a problem for Rav Chisda, in the sense that he, as an Amora, is saying something that's not unanimously accepted by all tanoim. Anyway, that will be seen at the last quarter of the page. And that's essentially a question that will take us to the top of Amud Beis. At that point, at the second line from the top of Amud Beis, the Gemara reinstates Rav Chisda as having said something that is of unanimous opinion. And as far as the source that seemed to indicate it was a machlokes tanoim, that will have a different explanation. So now let us turn to the Gemara, second line from the top of Mem Beis. Toshma. Yochol lo yehei be'erech ish, avol yehei be'erech isha. Could it be that he will not be included in the Torah dedication of a male, but yes, in the Torah dedication of a female? Tomet lomar hazachor im nekeva. This is a fusion of words from the pasuk, and the result of these words, and especially the word im, which Rashi says is being darshaned over here, the loy tumtum the androgynous, that when we speak about someone included in a Torah dedication, it would have to be someone that's either a male or a female, not a tumtum and not an androgynous. So we see that a tumtum appears to be a separate category, not like Rav Chisda that claimed it was a doubt, either male or female. So the Gemara responds, Sami Mikan Tumtum. Delete from this source the reference to Tumtum. The Gzeres HaKosev is coming to exclude only androgynous, and it's not dealing with Tumtum. As we said before, if a Pasuk doesn't exclude something that's a matter of doubt, and since Tumtum is a matter of doubt, it's not something that the Pasuk is addressing. Toshma. So we now turn to another source. This source deals with a korban shlomim. The pasuk says im zohar im nekeva. Zohar vadai nekeva vadois. That a korban shlomim, a shlomim sacrifice, can be brought from an animal that's a definite male or a definite female. Velo tumtum vandrogynous, and not to be brought from tumtum nor androgynous. Now, don't think for a second that since this source said zohar vadai, here we're coming to exclude something that's of a suffix nature. So Rashi already anticipates this and tells us that, as we've said already several times today, that the pasuk doesn't exclude something that's a matter of doubt. And therefore, if this source is excluding a tumtum, it must be because it is a beria b'fnatma, a separate category of creature. Once again, the Gemara says, Sami mikan tumtum. Delete tumtum from this shlomim source, because as Rav Chisda said, tumtum is a doubt, and hence the pasuk wouldn't be addressing it. Toshma. We quote from another source. This is a source that was referred to on a previous daf, and it's in the context of a korban oila, and it says the pasuk says ha zohar, that a korban oila is brought from a male animal. This was referred to, by the way, on mem aleph amid beis. Rashi at this point in the Gemara says I explained this source already above. So we continue. Kishu Omer Lamato Zohar, when later in the Parsha of Ola the word Zohar is repeated, in other words, the opening word HaZohar is a quote from the case of an Olas Bokar, that's a an Korban Ola coming from cattle. Later, it talks about coming from tzon, sheep and goats. So why does it repeat that if you bring a korban ola from sheep or goats, it must be from a male animal? That should be obvious. So when it says zohar later, she'ein talmud lomar, you don't have to teach me that for the sake of the information itself. So ma talmud lomar, what does zohar come to do? What does it come to accomplish when it's repeated? Lahoitzi tumtum v'androgynous, to exclude tumtum as well as androgynous. So once again, you see that the pasuk is excluding tumtum. So it must be that tumtum is a separate category of creature, not a function of doubt between male or female, but rather a third separate category. That would represent a kasha on Rav Chisda. Once again, the Gemara answers, Sami mikan tumtum, delete from this source the reference to tumtum. Ta shma. Now we have another source. This source refers to the area of animals set aside for various purposes. And it says, Hanevad v'amukse, that an anevad is a creature that was worshipped. Muktzah is an animal, is a creature that was set aside as an offering to an idol. For esnan, this is an animal given as payment for a harlot for services rendered. Vamechir, this is an animal that was exchanged for a dog. Vetumtum vandragenes, kulon metamin begodim abes habliya. All of these, and we're talking about a bird, because when we speak about tumah besabliyah, this is a reference to that which creates ritual impurity at the point that one eats it, and that's something special to the realm of a bird. A bird, a kosher variety bird, and in this case we're talking about a kosher variety bird that had been dedicated as a sacrifice, as a korban oif, and it was nimlach, it received the malika treatment. And, well, any of these things are, because they were worshipped or given as payment to a harlot, they're not suitable to be brought as a korban. So the malika is essentially a non-sacrificial act, so it's tantamount to simply killing the bird. And therefore, it's considered dead meat, and dead meat of kosher variety birds is metamin begodim abeis habliya. Communicates tuma to the individual who eats that meat and his clothing at the point that he's beis habliya, at the point that he swallows it. Rabbi Elazar omer, tumtum v'andragenus ein metamin begodim abeis habliya. Rabbi Elazar disagrees with regard to tumtum androgynous, that they wouldn't communicate tuma abeis habliya. Shoy Rabbi Elazar omer, komokum shenemar zohar nekeva, wherever the Torah makes reference to zohar nekeva, which we're going to see shortly, is not the case by birds, but by animals, where the Torah refers to the gender, zohar male or nekeva female, ata moitzi tumtum v'androgynous mibineihim, you would exclude tumtum and androgynous from amongst them. That's a sign. This, by the way, we've dashed underlined. This is a sign that it's a bria b'fnei asma. It's not a suffix. The oif hayov lo ne'emar bo zohar nekeva. With regard to birds, when the Torah talks about bringing a bird offering, it doesn't mention gender. So ein ata moitzi tumtum v'androgynous mibineihim. You don't exclude them. So that if you had a bird offering that was either a tumtum or an androgynous, it would be fine. It wouldn't be an example of something puzzle. And therefore the malika, the ritual slaughter of a bird offering, would have been a successful slaughtering. And if it's a successful slaughtering, it therefore prevents it from becoming a source of tumah. The Tanakama, however, views the tumtum and androgynous as something, even though we're dealing with birds, as something that's patently unacceptable as a korban, and therefore the malika that's done is not an effective malika, just like we described by the ne'evad, the muktzah, the esan, the mechir as well. For our purposes, we don't have to dwell so much more on any additional details of bird offerings. What we see from this source is that the tumtum is by virtue of the pasuk, as we certainly saw that in the case of Rabbi Elazar, if the Torah would use the term zohar and nekeva, it would have been excluding a tumtum. So we see that tumtum is a separate category. It's not a function of a doubt. So the Gemara answers once again, sami mikan tumtum. Delete tumtum from this discussion. In other words, any pasuk reference to an exclusion of something, one thing is for sure, says the would say Rav Chisda, that it's not coming to exclude a tumtum. Toshma, Rebbe Lozer Omer, Hatshrefa v'akilayim v'yotze doifin, tumtum v'adreginis, loy kedoshim v'lo magdishim. Rebbe Lozer says that these kind of animals, a trefa is an animal with an organ deficiency, a kilayim is a mixed bred animal, yotze doifin is a cesarean section birth of an animal, and tumtum v'adreginis, they don't gain sanctity, and they cannot be a basis of sanctifying other things. V'omar Shmuel, lo kedoshim b'tmura, v'lo makedishim la'asos tmura. They do not absorb kedusha through the tuma process, through the tumura process. This is a process where one attempts to replicate the kedusha from an existing sacrifice onto another animal, a chulin, another common or mundane animal. That's tumura. But these creatures do not lend themselves to becoming kadosh, becoming holy through the tumura process. Which is interesting to note, by the way, that tumura is something that would take hold on an animal with a blemish. But here we're saying that though tumura has expansive effects, it won't affect a tumtum. The Gemara also mentioned that it's not makdishim lasos tmura. Rashi gets into the details of that. The main thing, though, for our purposes, and this is what Rashi brings out, is if tumtum was a suffix, it was simply a question of maybe it's a male or a female, so then why could it not absorb holiness? Why would you say that if you set a sacrifice, a true kosher sacrifice, next to a chulin tumtum, and say that I want to replicate the kedusha onto the tumtum, why would you say it doesn't take hold? If the tumtum is either a zohar or an akeva, it should take hold. So from the fact that it doesn't take hold in the tumura process, which we said before was itself a rather expansive possibility of sanctification, it must be that tumura is something that's out of the ballpark. It's simply a separate category of creature. And hence we see again a kasha on Rav Chisda. The Gemara answers, sami mikan tumtum. Simply delete tumtum from this discussion. And as far as we are concerned, as far as Rav Chisda is concerned, if one attempted to apply the tumura process, a tumura sanctification would take hold of a tumtum on the grounds that it's either a male or a female. Toshma, Rebbe Lazar Omer, Chamisho lo kedoshim v'lo makdishin. There are five examples of things that cannot become holy and cannot be the source of holiness for other things. The Elohein HaTrefo, Vakilayim, the Yotzudoifen, the Tumtum Vandragonis. We've already cited what these things are, no need to dwell on the details. What we see here is that there are five things that do not absorb sanctification, Korban sanctification. So you see from here that the tumtum must be something it's not a function of a doubt. It must be a beria b'fnei atzma. Because if it was a doubt, it would become holy. Because we know that males and females, animals, do absorb kedusha. Now, v'chitei mahochinami sami mikan tumtum, havuluhu arbo. If you try the answer, the delete answer that we have given up till now, well then that would be a problem with regard to this source, because this source emphasizes a number, it states a number of things that don't absorb kedusha. So it must be then that the tumtum is a beria b'fnei atzmoi. The Gemara says, no, the issue of the number, we can get around that. Apik tumtum, in fact, delete tumtum from the source. The ayil yosoim, and put in the case of yosoim. Very briefly, the case of yosoim is an animal that as it was being born, its mother was dying. So its mother died as it was emerging. That's called a yasam, and there is a basis for excluding that from absorbing kedusha. The Gemara, at this point, after having defended Rav Chisda from all of these attacks, we try another approach with regard to Rav Chisda and say that he's a point of view that would be a machlokes tanoim, a tanaic controversy. You'll notice we have a long question that accompanies this piece of Gemara, starting here, the shin that's encircled to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line which takes it to the top of Amud Beis. All of this is part of the question. On the outside margin under our Nosei heading, you see we've written Nosei Hemshech. We're continuing in our discussion concerning Rav Chisda, and we've written here Nisayon Lahamid Es Rav Chisda Kemachloikis Tanoyim. And in general, this isn't the best position for a Tana, for an Amora to be in, an Amora being the scholars of the Gemara period, when he is saying something that's not of unanimous acceptance amongst the Tanoim, the earlier school of thought of the Tanoim. So we ask the question all the same, Lema Kitanoi. The source begins with Rabbi Loi Omer, Mishum Rabbi Shmuel. Androgynous Bechor Hu Umumoi Imoi. Androgynous hermaphrodite animal that's born, as far as Rav Loi in the name of Rav Shmuel is concerned, it is a male animal. He categorizes it a male, and simply having a blemish. So the fact that it has this dual gender appearance, it's basically a male with a crease in its flesh. Ein kedusha chola olav. The Chachamim say the androgynous is a beria b'fnei atzma. It is a separate category, and hence there is no sanctity that applies to it. However, and this is very important for us to emphasize, a tumtum is not something that he argues about. As far as a tumtum is concerned, it would become sanctified. Misafik. Rashi brings this point out lower part of the narrow lines. Rashi says, "Ein kedusha chol alav de beriyahu." It's a separate category. Aval betumtum lo pligi. There is no argument between the Chachamim and the first opinion. The safek who? It is a safek. That sounds very much like Rav Chisda. Continuing, Rav Shimon ben Yehuda Omer Mishum Rabbi Shimon, Hare Hu Omer Ha Zohar. Pasuk uses that term, Hazohar, the male. The Chomokum Shenemar Zohar, Eno Elo Lahotzi, Tumtum Vandreganus. And wherever you see this term, the Torah is excluding a Tumtum as well as an Androgynous. Now, how is it that it's being excluded? It's being excluded by virtue of the fact that it is a beria. It's a separate entity. It's not a Zohar nor a Nekeva. And it's not a matter of doubt. As a result of this opinion is not like Rav Chisda. So we see Rav Chisda turning into a Machlokes Tanoim. V'chitema Sami Mikan Tumtum. If you were to say, you know, let's delete Tumtum from this discussion, which would be very convenient for Rav Chisda, of course, because then everyone is in agreement that a Tumtum would be a Suffolk. There's a problem, though. If you do that, Rav Shimon ben Yehuda, who was the final opinion in this source, Hainu Rabbonon, he would be the same as the previous opinions, that both of whom excluded the androgynous as not becoming, as not being classified as a Bechor, because it's a beria b'fnei atzma, but not a tumtum. He would be just the same as everyone above. Elo lav tumtum iko binayu. So we have to conclude that the point of difference is the issue of a tumtum. The Tanakama savar ein kedusha chola olav a androgynous aval tumtum sveiku v'kadosh misveika. The first opinion in this source would say that the Chachomim specifically, they said regarding an androgynous, so if it's a firstborn, so there's no sanctity that settles upon it. it's a beria b'fnei atzmo, but a tumtum is an issue of a suffik. Also, Reb Shimon ben Yehuda, that we are now at the top of Omid Beis, Lameimar, he comes to say, Tumtum ber Yehu, velo kadosh. Just like the androgynous is a separate category, Reb Shimon Yehuda adds Tumtum as a separate category. That having been said, we're now basically saying that Rav Chisda is a machloikas tanoyim. Loi. More response in defense of Rav Chisda. De kule alma tumtum bebrea loi mesafka. Everyone agrees, as far as these tanoim are concerned, that a tumtum is not a beria. Bezochar unekeva hu de mesafka. It's something that we are in doubt as to whether it's a male or a female. And now, some further qualifications. Matil mayim b'mokom zachrus kule amalo pligi de zohar. If you have an animal that's a tumtum, its gender signs are covered over, and it happens to urinate at a point on its anatomy that a male animal would relieve itself. So we have an animal covered over, gender-wise, but the urination takes place from a point on its body that a male would urinate. Everyone agrees that that is a zohar. It's classified as a male. The zohar who? Ki pligi, the machlokes tanoim that we saw, b'matil mayim b'mokoim nakfus. You're dealing with an animal whose gender signs are covered over, and its urination takes place from a point on the anatomy that a female animal would be matil mayim, urinate. So that being the case, mor sovar chayshinon shemo nefcho zachruso lenakvuso. The chachomim who say that it will be treated as a male misafek, even though the urination is taking place from a point that a female would have done so, we're choshesh that maybe the male organ that's currently covered up, the male organ has been bent, we'll say, out of position, so that the urination takes place in a spot characteristic of an akeva of a female, but you're dealing with something that basically is a male. Hence, the Chachamim did not exclude Tumtum from Kedushas Bechor on the grounds that it really is a male. Umor Sovar, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, who excluded the Tumtum, Lo Cheshinon. He doesn't suspect that there was some type of nefcho zachrusu l'nakvuso, that the male organ bent into a different position, and therefore he takes the opinion that it is a definite, it is a female, and therefore it has no kedushas b'chora, and therefore it's excluded along with the androgynous, but not because it's a beria, but because he classifies it as a nekeva. So between the two tanoim, the Chachomim and Reb Shimon Yehuda, neither one is viewing this tumtum as a beria b'fnei atzmo. Simply, the Chachomim who said it would have sanctity based on doubt, is because of this chashash shemo nefcho zachrusu lefuso, and Reb Shimon ben Yehuda says it doesn't have any sanctity. We're dealing once again with a tumtum that's urinating from the nekeva point on the anatomy. It's covered over, but it appears from that position on the body that it's matil mayim, and hence it will not have kedushas bechora. Now this last description, namely Rav Shimon ben Yehuda's approach to the tumtum that's matil mayim b'mokum nakvus, this is kiha dehoira Reb Eloi. Rebbe Loi, now this Rebbe Loi is not to be confused with the Rebbe Loi that we saw cited earlier. This is an Amora. This Amora is ruling like Reb Shimon ben Yehuda. He ruled concerning an animal that is its gender was its gender organs are covered over, and the urination is taking place from a mokum nakfus, and such an animal was born as a firstborn, he ruled it to be a chulin animal. A chulin animal meaning it's vadai nikeva. Only male firstborns have sanctity. He ruled it as mundane, as chulin, indicating vadai nikeva. At this point, the focus of the Gemara turns to Rabbi Eloi, and under our Nosei heading in the outside margin, you'll notice we have written Psak shel Rabbi Eloi Bechor Tumtum Hamatumai Bemokum Nakfus. This is a firstborn creature that is urinating at a point of its body that a known female would have emitted its urination. It's urine. Chulin, it is considered mundane, it's considered non-sanctified. The vadai mekevahi. Now, alze toma Rabbi Yochanan. As we go on in the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan expresses amazement about concerning this psak of Rabbi Eloi. If we pause for a moment before going on in the Gemara, and we look back at Omid Aleph, the source that presented a Tanaic controversy, and we set up this source in order to defend Rav Chisda from the second line from the top of this Gemara till this point, we set up that source as talking about as referring to a tumtum whose organs of gender are covered up and it's urinating from its mokum nakfus, from a point on the body that a female would have urinated. Who in this source says it's a definite female? Answer, the last opinion, Rav Shimon ben Yehuda. What about the first opinions in this source? Well, we indicated earlier that they are not arguing with each other regarding the tumtum. So we have two former opinions that are saying that it's a b'chor misofek, that based on this idea of shema, nevcho, zachruso, maybe it's the male organ which they're taking into consideration, that it might be in fact a male. The male organ bent over to a position that it would appear as if it would appear that it was in a cave because it's urinating from the mokum nakvus. But those first two opinions would not have said that it's a chulin because they're considering that it might very well be a male animal. How did Rabbi Eloi rule? He chose basically a minority opinion in ruling that it's a definite chulin. So tohi bo Rabbi Yochanan expresses amazement. Man delo chosh lo letana kama velola Rabbi Yishmael. Who is this? Namely, referring to Rabbi Eloi, that doesn't take into consideration the Chachomim nor Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael was the opening opinion in the source on Omid Aleph, quoted by Rabbi Eloi the Tana. They both considered it as a possible male. Rabbi Eloi ruled this case as a definite female by virtue of the fact that he said if it's a firstborn, it's chulin. So we just heard Rabbi Yochanan. At this point, there is a sort of like an internal discussion surrounding Rabbi Yochanan's question. On the outside margin, you'll notice we have a Mivneh heading. The volcano shape represents a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give and take that will ensue in the next four lines of Gemara. The narrow part facing upwards represent kushios al Rabbi Yochanan, question mode, and when it flips over, represents an answer mode. So at this point, we hear Rabbi Yochanan expressing amazement at Rabbi Eloi, but now we're going to focus on Rabbi Yochanan. So the Gemara asks, "Valema Rabbi Yochanan nami?" Why doesn't Rabbi Yochanan add to the list of names man and say as follows, "Man delochosh l'rabbonon basroi"? Who is this, namely Rabbi Eloi, that doesn't take into consideration the opinion of the Rabbonon Basroi, the Omar Rabbi Yosef, Rav Chisda? This is a reference back to Rav Chisda, way back on Daf Mem Aleph Omid Beis, Rav Chisda was referring to opinions, Kanaic opinions that we saw earlier, that we saw referenced in the Mishnah on Daf Mem Aleph Omid Aleph. Rav Chisda said, Machloikis Bandreginis, Avo Betumtum Divrei Hakoil Sveika. Only regarding the androgynous, we saw a machlokis regarding an androgynous firstborn, opinions saying that it's a separate category of animal, it's a bria, and therefore it could be shorn and worked with. This we saw on Daf Mem Aleph Omid Aleph in the Mishnah. There was a final opinion in that Mishnah called the Chachomim, and they said the Chachomim there said it, that's a pronoun, it is not a b'chor, and it's definitely not a b'chor, it could be shorn and worked with. That was a reference to, as Rav Chisda explained, that was a reference only to androgynous. But as far as a tumtum is concerned, they wouldn't have said that it's nigzaz v'nevad. Avol betumtum divrei hakol sveika. Rav Chisda wanted to say that everyone back there on Daf Mem Aleph Omid Aleph would have categorized it as a suffix, not like Rebbe Loi. So the question here right now is why Rabbi Yochanan, when criticizing Rebbe Loi, simply said that Rebbe Loi was not taking into consideration the Tanakama and Rabbi Shmuel of the Brisa that we saw on Mem Beis Omid Aleph, when in fact Rebbe Loi doesn't seem to be taking into consideration the opinion of the Tanoim that we saw way back on Daf Mem Aleph Omid Aleph in the Mishnah. Well, the Gemara answers, you know why Rabbi Yochanan didn't add Rabbonon Basroi to the list? Because Rabbi Yochanan lo svirolei de Rav Chisda. Rav Yochanan does not accept Rav Chisda's analysis of those Tanoim back on Mem Aleph Omid Aleph. It's Rav Chisda's opinion that the argument there concerns only the case of androgynous. That's Rav Chisda's opinion. But Rabbi Yochanan says, no, they will argue concerning the, just like the Rabbonon Basroi were saying that the androgynous is Chulin Gemurin, and hence Nigzaz V'Nevad, those Rabbonon Basroi would say the same thing about a Tumtum. And as far as we are concerned, as far as Rabbi Yochanan is concerned, therefore the Psak of Rabbi Loi doesn't run against what they would say. Well, E, lo, svirolei, well, if that answer is correct, if Rabbi Yochanan doesn't hold from Rav Chisda, then lema, then why doesn't Rabbi Yochanan say, who the Omar Karabonan Basroi? That Rabbi Loi's psak, viewing the tumtum as a nekeva vadoyas, as a definite nekeva, in the case we described above, he is in conformity to the Rabbonon Basroi. So why is Rabbi Yochanan so amazed? So the Gemara answers, Hochi Nami Ka'omar. This is exactly what was bothering Rabbi Yochanan. Man Shavik Trei, the Ovid Kechad. Who is it, and it's referring to Rebbe Loi in his psak above, who is it that avoids two, namely he avoids the Tanakama and Rabbi Shmuel, and goes like the Rabbonon Basroi, and goes like the one opinion of the Rabbonon Basroi? So at this point then, we understand what Rabbi Yochanan was bothered by. Well, v'Rabbi Loi keman savara. So now the question is, well, Rabbi Loi, who does he hold like? What motivated him to abandon the opinion of two and go like the opinion of just one? So to answer for this question of Rabbi Loi keman svara, who does he hold like in viewing the tumtum as a Chulin Gemurim, Ki ha diyamar Reish Lakish, lo amru tumtum safek ela ba'adam. The whole approach to a tumtum as a safek is only with regard to a human being. Hoyu v'zachruso v'nakvuso b'mokum echad. Since the organs of gender of by a male and a female are more or less in the same place. Avol behema, but when you're dealing with a behema, an animal, matil mayim b'mokum zachrus, zohar. Matil mayim b'mokum nakvus, nekeva. An animal that's relieving, that's urinating where a male animal would urinate. So even though it's covered over, that's a male. A covered over gender animal urinating from where a definite female would urinate. So this is also a nekeva. We have a note, you can see, to glance at the Rashi across from here. Hoyo v'zachrus v'nachfus b'mokum echad. V'leko l'mivdekinhu b'atolas mayim. With regard to a human being, the urination check cannot be run because the male and female urinate from the same basic location on their anatomy. Avol b'vehema ein ba shum sofek l'divrei hakol. This is Reish Lakish, and based on this explanation, Rav Eloi ruled that the behema, who's covered over and is matil mayim b'mokum nakvus, is a clear nekeva, and hence, if it's a firstborn, it's clearly non-sanctified. V'hai deko'omar tanakama de masnisin eno nishchat. The Tanakama of the Mishnah that made reference to a tumtum as something that would not be slaughtered. That's the case of b'matil mayim b'mokum zachus ko'omar, where it would urinate from the place that a male animal would urinate. Devadei kodosh, it's definitely holy. Hilkoch eino nishchat b'medino, therefore it can't be slaughtered outside the Beis HaMikdash. It's a definite male and it's a firstborn. Uva mikdash nami loy chazi lakrova. As far as offering, if you're so sure then that it's a male, why don't you offer it as a b'chor korban? No, that neither. The nira kebal mum. It appears as a blemished animal. The fishein lo zachrus. It's lacking the noticeable organ of male gender. Daha mimatino le mehakrova bekama duchti. We find this being excluded from being offered as a sacrifice in many places. It pasuk says hazachar and we darshin velo tumtum. For Rabbi Shmuel in the Mishnah on daf mem aleph omen aleph, androgynous koi. He was referring to his point of disagreement in the Mishnah there, where Rabbi Shmuel said ein l'chamum gadol mizeh. That is a reference to the androgynous, where an androgynous firstborn, he would have said, can certainly be slaughtered outside the Beis HaMikdash. The Tanakama having said, regarding the androgynous, it cannot be slaughtered outside the Beis HaMikdash. The controversy revolved around androgynous, not revolving around the tumtum. They weren't arguing about that. V'rabbonan basroi. And the Rabbanan Basroi in the Mishnah on Daf Mem Aleph Omer Aleph that says Nigzaz Vin Evad, that's androgynous koi. They are referring to the androgynous, that it is a definite non-bechor. Avol tumtum kuli alma modu. But regarding the tumtum, all the Tanoim will agree. The matil mayim b'mokom zachu zohar, if it's urinating from the point that a male animal would urinate, it is a male. B'mokom nakvus nekeva, and from the female point, it would be a female. V'reboloi aliba dekulu hoiro, and Reboloi's psak is in conformity to all Tanaic opinions. Continuing in the Gemara. Rabbi Loi above, and we have a little arrow to the immediate right left-hand side of the Gemara, so just to refer to the upper arrow, Rabbi Loi ruled concerning a behemoth that's matumai b'mokum nakvus as a definite nekeva. So maskif lo roshay v'lechu shemo nevcho zachruso lenakvuso. Why not suspect? Why is it so clear that this didn't happen? Why not suspect that maybe the male organ bent over to create an appearance that it's a nekeva, but maybe it really is a male? So the brackets that appears in this Gemara indicates that we should skip the next couple lines. There's a bracket length indicator to the immediate right hand side of Gemara, the dashed dotted vertical line. When we skip this, we get right to the answer of the Gemara. We just, Rav Hoshaya asks, why not be choshesh of the, maybe it's really a male? So the Gemara answers, is the Omar ishtani? The is the Omar lo ishtani. Now we glance at Rashi. On the last, the second to last narrow line of Rashi, Mishani is domar ishtani kloimar, iko leman domar amrinon hoyil veishtani ishtani bebehemo. There are those that say that since something has changed, so it's considered changed in the case of an animal. The hainu tanakamo, the polig liel olei derib Shimon ben Yehuda. The Shita Mekubetzes helps in the reading. And we glance at the Yudches under the Rashi text. The is the Amri lo Amrinon bevehemo hoyol veishtani ishni. And there are those that say, with regard to animals, that since there is some partial change, it's we don't go all the way with changes. V'hainu Reb Shimon ben Yehuda, the lo chayshinon shemo nevcho, that is not choshesh that maybe there was this bending over of the organ. So we don't, we're not choshesh for that. Ribeloi krib shimon svirolei, and ribeloi will be based on that. That I don't worry about that. I don't take that into consideration. So if we saw the Tanakama that says the Tanakama that worries that maybe it's a zohar. He says, well, since it underwent some change, namely it looks strange in the fact that it's covered over, it's a tumtum, so it's already so we say this additional change also took place. The additional change, namely the bending over of the organ, whereas Reb Shimon ben Yehuda says, true, there's a change in the fact that its gender is covered over, but I'm not going to take into consideration that this additional change took place in the positioning of the organ. Before we go any further in the Gemara, let's go back over the bracketed section. Actually, let's read again. Maskif lo Rav Hoshaya. Rav Hoshaya asks on Rabbi Loi's psak that it was so, Rabbi Loi was so confident that the case of Matil Maya b'mokum nakvus is a nekeva. Why not say maybe v'lechu shemo nevcho zachruso lenakvuso, that maybe the male organ bent over to give the impression that it's a nekeva, but really it's a zohar. Omar le Abaye. Abaye, he attacks Rav Hoshaya's question. Keman kerebi meir, the chayesh lemiuta, are you asking your question based on the well-known opinion of Rabbi Meir? Rabbi Meir is a minority opinion. Rabbi Meir says, take into consideration the minority chances, the mi'ut. In other words, you're adding this possibility, this we'll call it far-fetched possibility, of nevcho zachruso lenakvuso. So, are you attacking Reb Hoshaya based on, hey, why didn't you take, why aren't you like Hoshish for Shitas Rabbi Meir? Why don't you apply Rabbi Meir's approach that is Hoshish for the mute? That's not something that should have any influence on someone's legal decision, this particular opinion of being Hoshish for mute. Well, so Abaye is asking on Rav Hoshaya's question. Stated simply, As far as Abaye is concerned, Rav Ashai shouldn't have asked his question. Well, Abaye bar Ovin, Rav Hanino bar Ovin, Ami Travayu, these two Amoroyim, they both say, Afilu Temo Rabbonan. The case question Rav Ashai was raising was a question that could be raised even following the opinion of the Rabbonan. There's still a basis for Rav Ashai's question. Why? Hail the Ishtini. Since there's already something odd about this animal, its gender organs are covered. Now, once it's gone through a change, so it doesn't fit into the category of majority of animals. And therefore, once we see already something odd about it, it's within the realm of reason to say there are other oddities about it. Namely, its organ, its male organ, bent over to a position giving you the impression that it's a female, but it really is a male. So Rav Hoshaya is justified in asking on Rebbe Loi, why did he paskin so conclusively that it is a female? So the answer on behalf of Rebbe Loi, he has a basis. This issue of Ishtini, Isti Omar Ishtini, there are those like the like the Rabbonan, who would say, yes, we do consider that, because it's gone through one change, namely it's covered over, that this organ also bent over. The Isti Omar Lo Ishtini, and the Reb Shimon ben Yehuda that we saw in the Brisa on Mem Aleph Amud Beis, on Mem Beis Amud Aleph, excuse me, opinion of Reb Shimon ben Yehuda says, okay, granted it's changed with regard to the covering of the organs, but once it's matil mai b'mokom nakvus, I'm not going to suspect that its organ bent over to create a second shinui. Now the Gemara gets involved with this topic of hoyel v'ishtini ishtini. If some change is witnessed, do you consider additional changes as well at the same time? We continue with a long question. You'll notice the shin appears to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical descending dashed line, indicating that all of the upcoming material is a question. Lema. Ishtini velo ishtini tanoi, that this issue is a machloikis tanoim. Before going further in the Gemara, we just pointed out that the Gemara will be raising a question that the issue of ishtini, Hoyov Ishtini, maybe is a machlokes tanoim. Personally, in delivering these Gemara Mark and Shurim, I try to avoid things that are of a personal explanatory nature. But in this case, it seems that something needs further clarification. And let me present my dilemma. The last point we learned just before continuing with this new question is that Reb Eloy's psak was based on the approach of Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, who, in opposition to the Tanakhama, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda says, we don't say hoyel v'ishtini ishtini, that even though there was a change with regard to the appearance of it being a tumta, meaning its gender is or its gender organs are covered, that's one level of shinoi. We don't go further and say that the position of the organ also changed. This is in contrast with the Tanakhama, who says that we do consider that the position of the organ changed. So the issue of hoyel v'ishtini ishtini would seem to be clearly a machlokes tanoim. But at this point now I add my own observation. This is true that we have a machlokes tanoim concerning a behema. And what tips me off on this emphasis is a word in Rashi on the first wide line under the Gemara. The fourth word on the line was bebehema. The Rashi had said there that there's a manda omer that says hoyel v'ishtini ishtini by a behema. What the Gemara wants to do now is to investigate this issue, not concerning behemoths anymore, but concerning people. Do we say in the realm of human beings, and specifically in the case of a tumtum human being, do we say that once it is we see one type of shinui, we should assume, or we can assume an additional type of change? But in order to let's say justify the Gemara's question of lema ishtin evolution is a machlokas tanaim, and we know that the term lema is something that oftentimes is rejected, and it will in fact be in the course of this Gemara as well. The Gemara at the end of the long question mark, and you can see on the middle of that line, it says lo de kuleyam amrina hoyol v'ishtini ishtini. Everyone agrees hoyol v'ishtini ishtini. So that would on the surface appear to be a very difficult point then for a belois psak, unless we say that the issue under discussion now is an issue not dealing with behemoths. That in with regard to behemoths, there is a machlokas tanoim, and Rabbi Loi will be based on the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda. But our new discussion, which in fact will conclude that everyone will agree hoyol v'ishtini ishtini, this is not dealing with behemoths. This is dealing with human beings. So this would be then appear as a basically a new discussion. So we continue now in the Gemara on the first wide, narrow line where we began reading Lema ishtini velo ishtini tanoi. Can we say that the issue of something having undergone one level of change, we can or cannot assume an additional level of change? This itself is a tanaic controversy. Desanya, we have a source, and we're calling this source number one. And then on the next line, we have a number two, which we'll present as source number two. The topic deals with the issue of mitzvahs yibum. And yibum in the context of a tumtum. A tumtum, as we've mentioned, and here we're talking about a human being whose organs of gender are covered. And the tumtum entered a marriage, and the issue is going to come up concerning yibum, where the tumtum dies, leaving a female, leaving a widow. Will mitzvahs yibum take place with regard to its surviving brother? And likewise, the issue concerning a where the woman dies, and what happens now with regard a surviving tumtum brother is around, where a woman was married to a man leaving no children, and the husband died, and there's a surviving tumtum brother. So we're going to see these two scenarios. Maybe just a word of introduction. With regard to mitzvahs yibum, the standard case of yibum is two brothers. One is married, and he dies leaving no children. The surviving brother is expected to marry the widow in the event that he chooses not to marry her. So the widow removes a shoe from the brother-in-law, the surviving brother's foot, her brother-in-law's foot. That's called chalitza. The Gemara now continues in this topic. Desanya, source number one, tumtum shekidesh, a tumtum that offered money to a woman in marriage, kedusha of kedushin, she is considered married, a married lady. Niskadesh, if a tumtum was himself taken in marriage, kedushav kedushin. So, that would be a case where a man offered a tumtum money, so the tumtum is considered married. The choletz, the tumtum will participate in chalitza. That would mean that's the case where a regular man had passed away, leaving a tumtum brother. And in the case that the tumtum was married and he died, and the tumtum died, and there left a regular brother, v'cholsin li'ishtoi. So the widow would participate in the chalitza ceremony. U'miyabmim li'ishto, if the tumtum had died, leaving a wife, so she can be married by the surviving brother. V'tanyo idach, a second source says, Eishes tumtum, choyletzes, v'loy misyavemes. Notice with our dashed underlining, we're focusing on what, on the main point of the ensuing discussion. The second source says that the tumtum who died, so the surviving wife, will not be allowed to marry a brother, her brother-in-law, the surviving brother, the tumtum's brother. Savruha, there is an assumption that we're going to make as we go on in the Gemara, the Kuli Almo Karabi Akiva. Both of these Tanaic sources adopt Rabbi Akiva's opinion. The Omar Sris Chama Lo Choyletz Velo Miabim. A Sris Chama is an individual, is a male that's impotent as a result of a disease. Someone who is a Sris Chama would not participate in Chalitza nor in Yibum. That is an assumption we're making now. My love, beho komifligi. Is it not so that the following is the point of controversy? Demand the Omar. Source number one, that said, choyleitz v'cholzin li'ishtoi, u'miyabmim es ishtoi. In the event that a tumtum died, leaving a normal brother, that he can take her, the widow of the tumtum, in marriage, loy amrinon, we do not say, hoyol v'ishtini ishtini. In other words, true, there was a shinui with regard to his gender signs covered, but we don't assume that he also became different in so far as becoming a soris. If we don't assume that he was a soris, we're just saying it's a person whose organs of gender were covered, but he is not someone who is physiologically impotent. Oh, so since he's physiologically not considered impotent, so his wife is fit for Yibum. We should have said earlier that the mitzvah of Yibum is not binding when the person who died was incapable himself of procreation. Of course, this is within the if the person himself was capable of procreation, so then there is mitzvah yibum. If the person himself was not capable of procreation, so he wouldn't be included in mitzvah yibum. That's as far as Rabbi Akiva is concerned, and we're saying that everyone agrees with Rabbi Akiva. Therefore, true, he was shimishuna in his organs of gender being covered, but we don't assume that he also had this additional shinui of being a soris. If he was a soros, there would be no yibum. But we don't assume that, according to this first source. Umando marcholetzis velomis yabemes, the second Mando Omar, who said that there is no yibum. Once again, we're dealing with a tumtum that died. So Amrinon, this, you know why there's no yibum of the widow of the tumtum? Because we say hoyol the ishtini ishtini. Once we see one level of change, the organs of gender are covered. He's probably changed also in his physiological capabilities of procreation. We at this point have come to the end of our long question. The Gemara says now, no, loy de kule alma lo amrinon. Everyone will agree hoyol the ishtini ishtini. And with that in mind, we have to consider that maybe he is a soris chama. If you have to consider maybe he is a soris chama, so then how can you possibly allow yibum? And we saw in source number one that the deceased tumtum, the widow of the deceased tumtum, does go through yibum. We'll explain that. Ha Rebbe Lozer, ha Rebbe Akiva. According to Rebbe Lozer, there, even though the deceased was a soris, there still is mitzvahs yibum. According to Rabbi Akiva, who is represented by source number two, a soris, when he dies, So there's no mitzvahs ibum. Rashi gives the background to these particular shitas. Rabbi Lozer, and we already mentioned Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Lozer appears in Maseches Yevomos that says the Eishes Saris Chama does do mitzvahs Yibum. And the reason given for that is because a Saris Chama is someone that could receive health or healing in Alexandria. They had a method of healing people from there, from that situation. Continuing in the Gemara, Uman Tano Alivo de Rebbe Akiva. We had source number 2 above that we said is in accordance with Rebbe Akiva. Often in the Shas, you have Tanaic opinions that are presented by later authorities. So here we're asking, which, according to whose version of Rebbe Akiva, is source number 2 being taught? If it's Rabbi Yehuda's version of Rabbi Akiva, we're looking for someone that within Rabbi Akiva would say that the wife, the widow of a Sris Chama would yes do Chalitza, but not do Yibum. Who is that? So, I Lema Rabbi Yehuda, if you're to think it's Rabbi Yehuda's version, Ha vadai soris mashvi lei. Rabbi Yehuda, as is presented in this upcoming source, views him, the tumtum, as a definite soris. And if that's the case, there wouldn't be any chalitza done either. Disnan, Rabbi Yehuda omer, tumtum shenikra, v'nimtza zohar, hareze lo yachloitz, v'pnei shehu kesoris. It's, you see, with our dashed underlining, Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that a tumtum doesn't do chalitza either. Now, if you compare that to the source above, namely source number 2 above, we saw there, yes, choletzis. So this, the source number 2 above that we represented as Rabbi Akiva, it can't be Rabbi Yehuda's version of Rabbi Akiva. Elo Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda hi. Source number 2 above that said cholesis velo misyabemes. This is Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda's opinion of Rabbi Kiva Desanya. Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda omer tumtum loy choyleitz shemo yikra v'yimso soris chamo. A tumtum shouldn't do chalitza because it might turn out that it's a male who happens to be a Saris Chama. But you see, there's an element of doubt, Shema. As let us now take a look at the Rashi, 5 lines from the bottom, El Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, the Shema Ko'omar. Shema means maybe. Hilkoch Chalitza Baya. Therefore, the wife who's left from a soris that died, since maybe he is a soris, but maybe not. Hilko chalitza bayo, deshema zoharhu, v'shema eno soris. Therefore, the wife has to get chalitza to free her because maybe the husband was a zohar and he was not a soris. However, velo misyabemes, but she doesn't marry the surviving brother, deshema zohar hu v'soris hu, v'ena zohuku liyovam. Because on the other hand, maybe he was a male that, yes, was a soris, and she is not fit for yibum, v'nimsa, and if the surviving brother were to marry her, kepogea b'yeshes ach she'esh lo bonim, it would be like marrying a surviving sister-in-law with having left children from his brother, which is forbidden from the Torah. By the way, just not to confuse things, in this particular source, it said that tumtum lo choletz, a tumtum who is a surviving brother, he should not do chalitza. This is certainly the case if there are other surviving brothers. The source above wasn't dealing with the Tumtum who is a surviving brother. The source above was dealing with the wife of the Tumtum, who the Tumtum died, and there was a normal brother. So the main point in this particular citation is the word Shema. The Gemara now asks, Otu kol to mikra, zohar mishtakach, nekeva lo mishtakach. In this source, it said, the covering might tear open, and he'll turn out to be a male that's a saurus. But when the covering tears open, what, maybe it will be a female. Maybe this person will be revealed as a female altogether. Why does this source say that in the event that the covering tears, this will show us that it's a zohar? So the Gemara says, you're right. Shema ko'omar. This whole source is shema v'shema ko'omar. This whole source is to be understood as a double doubt. Shema yikra v'yimsa nekeva. This tumtum whose covering tears open, it tears open. It might turn out to be a female. Inami zohar, nami. Even if it turns out to be a male, shema yimsa soris chamo. So, if you'll say this source that says that the tumtum doesn't do chalitza, it might very well be because you're dealing with a lady, and we're dealing with a person whose brother died leaving a wife. Well, if the tumtum turns out to be a lady, so ladies don't marry ladies. And even if it turns out to be a male, this surviving individual, it may be Shema Yimsa Soris Chamo. And as a person incapable of procreation, he does not do Yibum. The Gemara continues, My Binayu. The Gemara, Rashi at the bottom, explains, My Binayu, Bein Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yossi B'Tumtum Shemes Ochiv. In the case of a Tumtum whose brother died, Hachavayu Lo Yachlots Kwamri, both of them say that the surviving brother does not do chalitza. So what halachic difference is there? We might just point out that according to the first opinion, Rabbi Yehuda, as opposed to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda was viewing the surviving brother as a definite soris. The second, Rabbi Yossi, he was viewing him as a possible soris. But in both cases, they rule that lo yachloitz. So Omar Rova, the point of difference will be, and now we're at the very top of Mem Gimel Amud Aleph, the point of difference will be as follows. Number one, lifsoil b'mokom achim. Number two, v'lachloitz shaloi b'mokom achim, ika binayu. And here Rashi spells out everything. Let's learn the Rashi together. Lifsoil b'mokom achim. Im yesh imoi achim hagunim. This surviving tumtum, he survives his brother that died leaving no children, if he has other healthy brothers. V'holach hu v'cholatz lo. And the tumtum of all the surviving brothers, the tumtum is the one that went ahead and participated in the chalitza ceremony of the surviving widow. L'Rebbe Yehuda lav klum avad. According to Rebbe Yehuda, who views the tumtum as a definite outsider to the realm of Yibum, because he says he's definitely a sris chama, so he's done nothing. V'lo poslo min ho'achim. And as a result of his act of chalitza, which is an act of zero significance, she could still marry one of the surviving brothers. In general, under healthy circumstances, if one brother participates in the chalitza ceremony, she, the surviving widow, is the sister-in-law of all these brothers. She is forbidden then to marry any of the others. In the case that a non-chalitza was done, because Rabbi Yehuda views the tumtum as a soris, so rosa echod min ho'achim li'abem yabem. If one of the other brothers wants to marry her, there's no problem. Rabbi Yossi, according to Rabbi Yossi, who said that this is a suffek saras, maybe he's not a saras, maybe he's a healthy male. So if he's a healthy, on that side of things, poslo min ho'achim, the shema chalitza so chalitza, maybe his participation in the chalitza ceremony is a chalitza, the ein echod min ho'achim yocholi yapmo, the keva do lobono shuvlo yiboneh. This is a drosha based on the posuk by mitzvah yibum. And if he doesn't build his brother's name by marrying the widow, so no further building of name can take place through any of the other brothers. Ella choizim v'chotzinla. One of the other brothers would have to do chalitza because of this element of suffix that maybe he really is a saris and his chalitza was not meaningful. But on the side that he's not a saris, his chalitza was a full-fledged chalitza, and therefore, as we just saw, she would be nifseles to the other brothers. The other brothers could no longer marry her. That's one point of difference. To review this, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if a tumtum surviving brother does chalitza and there are other normal brothers around, they could miabim her. According to Rabbi Yossi, if the tumtum did chalitza, the other brothers cannot miabim her. V'lachlois shelo b'mokam achim. Rashi continues. Once again, we're dealing with the case of a woman whose husband died, leaving a tumtum brother. Tumtum sibling, im ein achim ella tumtum, if there are no other brothers, there's only the tumtum, the Rabbi Yehuda miftero b'volo klum, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who views the tumtum as a definite soris, so she can marry, this surviving widow can marry anyone else without doing any ceremonies. The havare soris who kalesi dami, he's definitely a soris as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, and it's as if he's not there. Ulu Rabbi Yosi bayo chalitza. According to Rabbi Yossi, this surviving tumtum will have to do chalitza, shemolav sorisu. Maybe he's not a soris. V'hai dekomar lo yachloitz, and that which Rabbi Yossi said in the source, at the bottom of Mem Beis Omid Beis, not to do chalitza, that is only in the case b'mokom achim komatz, where there are other brothers. Let one of the other brothers do the chalitza, one of the normal, that will be a definitive chalitza. So with this we see the distinction between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yehuda, said that we view the tumtum as a definite soros, versus Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yehuda says we view the tumtum as a possible soros. With that, we not only conclude the perek, but we conclude our shiur for today.